included some of these smaller, you know, holding a few horses or cows or sheep or whatever in the barn. And I just want to be made comfortable about that, because I think it is, I don't think any of us want to see a situation where a 4-H kid has to get a CAFO permit. So, I mean, I'm just trying to make sure where we are.
Members of the committee, I'm Dick Nichols from DEQ. The definition of a CAFO through this bill has gone some changes. Just to give you a little bit of history, it started off with substantial more language in it than what is in it now, and it had to deal with, in fact, I'll get it out here and read it. And the concern there then was it used to also read, where the surface is prepared with concrete, rock, or fibrous material to support animals in wet weather, or where the concentration of animals has destroyed the vegetative cover and natural infiltrative capacity of the soil. And the concern was there, as Representative Schroeder was concerned, that you might even have one or two cattle that or cattle or pigs or something and would destroy the natural vegetation. Somewhere in the process, the latter part was taken out, and it was just left with concrete, rock, and fibrous material to support animals in wet weather, which I think eliminates the problem for those animals that are, or places where you have animals that destroy the natural vegetation. However, there are, I think, a lot of confined animal feeding operations, commercial establishments, that do not have concrete, rock, or fibrous material, but do generate wastewater that has to be treated. So before, in fact, as a result, the Dash 7 amendments came when I suggested that we needed to have the last phrase, or which have wastewater treatment works. Feeling then that anyone, any facility that generates enough wastewater to have to be treated, then falls into a category needing right. a permit. And that's basically where we left it.
I guess my question, Mr. Chair, is where does the whole set of amendments exclude the little, I mean, I understand it's 4 months or less. I mean, if you have a confined animal feeding operation of 4 months or less, you're not subject. So I guess, suppose that's one place right there. But suppose you have a rainy winter and you keep your cows inside or your two sheep inside for 6 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. What?
Okay, if you read on there, it says, you know, 4 months or less, or that do not have wastewater control facilities. And so if you don't have wastewater control facilities, you fall out of a permit or fee already.
That's it.
Now, I would, you know, the language, you know, it says a fee shall not be assessed.
Right.
It might make it clear to everybody if it said a fee shall not be assessed or permits not required. And a permit is not required to make it absolutely, positively clear.
You could also add that 4-H members didn't apply to.
I think what's thrown me here a little bit is it's sort of a double negative. You've got a double negative in the statute here. A fee shall not be assessed if you don't have something. It's kind of, mine's having a little trouble wrapping around it. That's what I think it is.
The intent is. I think the intent, you know, we can, well, I'm done.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hanneman.
Some of the people that we want this to apply to don't have wastewater treatment facilities. Is that true?
Chair Soa, Representative Hanneman, yes.
Okay, they're exempted from a permit if they don't have a facility.
Yes, and see the logic that
I had. I know what your logic was, but it approaches it backwards. The people that have the wastewater treatment facilities in my district, 256 dairies, 180 of them in Tillamook County alone, which I represent the whole county of, most of them have a facility, so they pay the fee. The ones that don't are the ones we're looking for and they're exempt.
Except for?
Except for?
Longer than 4 months.
Longer than 4 months.
Oh, it rains for 8 months in...
But they hold those animals for longer than 4 months.
Yes.
So they would get a permit.
Representative, so...
They need a permit.
Representative Hanneman.
And so, does a neighbor who has 5 sheep confined for 6 months with no treatment facility must get one. And, yeah. No? You don't need a permit?
Mr. Chairman,
I may be off base here.
Give us some new light.
I'm Bruce Andrews, Director of the Department of Agriculture. Clearly, there's going to be some practical application to this. What everybody wants out of this thing is to stop untoward pollution wherever it exists. We aren't staffed well enough, nor is our neighbors with the truly black hats here staffed well enough to go around and look after, you know, 4 and 5 animals. I will grant you, I could see a time when 4 or 5 animals in somebody's backyard would cause such a nuisance that we would be required to act if they were doing so in such an unsanitized or offensive manner. But clearly most 4-H and FFA project from a practical consequence or the backyard sheep project or horse project, we're not only not going to have time for, our intent would be never to deal with these unless they actually created a problem or it generated complaints. And if it generates complaints, that's the bottom line.
That's it.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Hanneman.
We know from years and years that if one neighbor doesn't like another one because there's some odor from those animals, they'll file a complaint, and then Salt and Water has to go check. And what I see under the bill is there must be a follow-through. That's why we want it. So I guess we see how it works, but there's no limitation on the number. That was the point that Representative Schroeder was making. It's not that Soil and Water looks for the bad ones and improves the industry. That is not the only thing this bill does. It also allows an animal animal shelter league from traveling through the district and reporting, and under the bill they're permitted to report their, if they wish, and then Soil and Water must come out to look at that, whether there's 5 sheep or 100 dairy animals. And so I think that's a concern, that the complaints may proliferate. And I'm not, with the funding of this as it's proposed, I'm not holding this up nor voting against it, but there are some problems in it that we ought to be aware of. And I think that it's going to have to be amended some next session or the session after, when we see how many complaints Soil and Water people get and how many staff people Department of Ag and DEQ need with what we've done.
Mr.
Senator Bradbury.
I understand exactly what you're trying to do. Okay, I think we all understand what you're trying to do. But what we're doing here is adopting a law, and the law can be interpreted a number of different ways. Now, if we put another person in your hat, in your seat, who had a truly black hat, they can work from the law. And I think that's the point. If there's a way to write the law so that it's not dependent on your intent, I think that's a lot smarter, because it just, everybody knows what the law is. It's not a matter of what your intent is. And that's, I guess I get, I just think it's a little, makes me a little nervous to be, I have no doubt about your intent. I really don't. I'm not questioning your motives here at all. I mean, I think your intent is, you're going to do just what you said. I don't have any doubt about that. The point is that this law is on the books for a whole lot longer than you're the director of the Department of Agriculture, or anybody else who's here. So I start to get sort of saying, let's make the law say what we intend it to say. That's all.
May I address? I'm going to address that comment. Representative Senator Bradbury, even without this bill, there's a lot of discretion on the part of the department relative to what activities have to be permitted and when they're to be permitted. And I think the department has been very responsible in addressing those that ought to be addressed and those that not won't be addressed. What this bill does, I think, is it provides some additional tools to the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Environmental Quality to try and address those that need to be addressed. When I tried to draft this thing up the first time, I wanted to make sure that the universe of those folks that are out there that ought to have a permit ought to be into it. And the trouble with that is it makes it too wide of a universe, and it makes people uncomfortable. And that's why it was scaled back to that in the definition to try and make it a little clearer. So folks who might think that they came under the provision that says if you have a permit or you don't have a permit and you need one, then you can be fined $500 on top of all the other civil penalties. And the idea was to encourage people who, rather than wait for the black hats to get there, to go ahead and put facilities in and get a permit when they needed to, so that the money, the amount of people who were paying for the fees would be those that appropriately had to. I struggled with this, trying to decide, well, how do you write a clear definition so that you don't leave a hole big enough for everybody to get out of, yet you don't make it so narrow that it doesn't do any good.
Mr. Chair.
Under Bradbury.
Do you currently have, under the DEQ statute somewhere, any definition of a confined animal feeding operation?
Senator Bradbury, no. The original definition I started off with is in our Oregon Administrative Rule.
And what's that? That's when you started with originally, which you ended up, through all the discussions, ended up being too broad.
Some folks thought so.
But, yeah. And that's the one you've been working from now.
Yes.
The one that's in your rules that right. People feel is too broad to put in the law.
And I played with other alternatives. I was going to change the definition in 468 such that, and I've got it written in here someplace, that a CAFO was the fibrous material of rock and that, where wastewater control facilities were required or necessary to...
Mr. Chairman, the truth is that this definition of CAFCO put in the statute is much more liberal than the administrative current law that is being administered currently.
Much more narrow.
You got the picture.
Fine. Yeah.
4-H people have a larger chance of coming under the administrative rule than this bill says. Plus, it's in statute, not to be changed by rule either way. That's the bottom line, really, to the whole thing.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I got to make a comment. This is the first time in the years I've been here I heard of a regulation too broad to put in the law. The regulation comes from the law. All regulations are adopted under the law.
Having to do with
doing people in your district a favor by excluding some of them that would be under the present definition passing this law.
I want to comment that I have not had a problem with DEQ as far as my office is concerned in my district. Matter of fact, they've struggled through a couple of very difficult ones where neighbors were keeping and bearing arms and then going one step farther. So, anyway, I guess I'd comment that with the proposed funding, the $45,000 from the governor's budget, the $50,000 that we put in on basis of need, and the $150 for the permit, I'm willing to give up the fight.
To Would you like to give that up to good as make a motion?
No, I would not.
Mr. Chair, we in work session?
Yes.
I'd like to make a move a very slight amendment on page 2, section 5, which would be along the lines of clarifying that a fee shall not be assessed and permit not required of confined feeding. It would need to be run through council. It would just be a clarification that the fee, neither the fee nor the permit is required of the CAFOs that don't fall under the provisions of the area.
That's fair.
And I don't have the exact wording because it gets a little grammatically complicated, but we could just make a conceptual amendment and then
as long as Mr. Corey understands.
Section 5, sub 2. And a permit not required.
Senator Bradbury moves a change in there. Dash, whatever they are. 7 amendments conceptually to clarify them. Any objection to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, can I request that he increase or include in that amendment on page 3, line 6, with the word affluent be changed to
affluent?
Effluent.
Effluent. So moved.
These are not rich cows.
I think that's, I don't know, that's the original statute. And I think it's spelled right in the original statute.
Okay.
Oh, I see.
Affluent?
It's so spelled effluent in the original statute.
I believe it is.
We should correct the draft then.
That's right. Amendments adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bradbury.
I would move House Bill 3445. Have we adopted the Dash 7 amendments?
No.
Okay, I would move the House Bill 3445 Dash 7 amendments dated 6889 as further amended.
Senator Bradbury moves the Dash 7 amendments as further amended. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair. There was a discussion before the meeting. That, let's see, it's no relationship to the funding yet in this motion. Will there, what's the process? I have another another one. All right.
In the balancing act.
Yes, and perhaps I ought to state it now under the discussion of this motion that we allow the agency to appear before the emergency board if the allocation based on the estimated number of complaints is insufficient.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Because if the districts really pick this thing up and go and we run out of 150s, then program will bog down before the next legislative session. So with that, then, having been said, I'll report.
Any other discussion? Any objection? Not so ordered.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bradbury.
I think the motion that would be in order is to move House Bill 3445 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bradbury moves House Bill 3445 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bradbury?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Representative
Hamby? Aye.
Representative
Stone? Aye. So ordered.
Thank you, Paul.
Development Ways and Means Committee come to order. We'll have the parties come up and tell us about the compromise agreement that you've worked out on House Bill 2237.
I was hoping someone would get up.
Thank you.
Ray Wilkerson, OFIC. After our last time the subcommittee considered this bill, we were asked by the chairman to talk with the Forestry Department and the Small Woodlands Association on a alternative version on the minimum lot assessment section of 2237. We did that, and we jointly agreed that an option that would assess the all improved lots surcharge of $20 while leaving the bare unimproved minimum lots at 15 as current law requires would be an acceptable alternative. I would like to make it clear for the subcommittee that as far as OFIC is concerned, either that version or the version that came out of the House Revenue Committee would be acceptable. It's basically a wash. It's basically revenue neutral. And we have communicated with Representative Hostica that there is an issue there, but it's not one that we have a position on one way or the other. Either one would be fine.
I'm Tom Lane, Department of Forestry. I think basically that's the department's position, that it's basically revenue neutral. And it's more of a case of a policy issue of which parcels are assessed.
Roger Beyer, Oregon Small Woodland Association. The Small Woodland Association will support the compromise that was agreed upon. We feel that is a fair deal for this time, and urge your support on that compromise.
Mr. Chair, I can say I'm the chair. Can you go through for me and show me how this is revenue neutral?
Mr. Chairman, originally in the bill was passed out of House Revenue. There are 104,000 lots that are considered unimproved minimum assessments.
104,000.
And that would have been assessed at $10 a lot.
Okay.
Let's see. There are 165,000 lots.
100 what?
165,000 lots will be assessed an additional $10 a lot.
They're approved.
Yeah, that are improved lots would be assessed additional $10 a lot, $1.6 million.
So they'll be assessed 20
instead of 10.
So their total tax will be?
$35.
They're 15 now.
On minimums would be $35, and on big lots that are improved would be whatever the normal acreage rate is plus $10, or plus $20, excuse me.
Let me try this again. Improved lots that are below, you know, small, 1 acre.
Minimum.
Improved lots. How much do they pay today?
$15.
They pay the same minimum that everybody else pays. Okay. And then you're adding 20.
Adding 20.
In fact, looks like a slight... more than a slight revenue gain.
No, actually, Mr. Chairman, I think it's $80,000 less.
Is it?
In total.
The question was, how is it revenue neutral, Tom?
Huh?
The question was, how is it revenue neutral? And the element that you left out is those lots that are counted twice.
Yeah. We actually come out $80,000 less in total.
You going to show us
yes.
Now on the board here? Good.
That's the way it was before. Now with the improved parcels being times 20, it was 3.3 million.
Yeah.
So these are the two alternatives.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
Just, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bradley.
The small woodlot owners, obviously, they would prefer that we deal with the minimum lot assessment, but we're not doing that. We're not going to surcharge you if you have a lot that's not improved. You won't be surcharged. You'll just continue to pay what you're paying now.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. Now, the other issue, which I just keep reiterating, but I don't know why, but the other issue this then raises is improved lots are the ones most likely to be in a rural fire protection district, correct?
Yes.
So we have now put a $20 addition on lots in a rural fire protection district, and these are the same people who, not all of them, but some of them certainly complain about paying for two fire districts. So.
Senator Bradbury, call your attention to the letter that I just distributed.
Oh.
It's a kind of a agreement that we worked out, a letter going to Department of Forestry asking them to participate in a discussion on how equitable everything is.
Good.
And come back to the next session of legislation.
Excellent.
And tell us if we're
Good.
Doing things right or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll be asking the subcommittee to recommend that letter as soon as we get to it. That's where I went. I thought I'd lost it.
Like I did for a short time.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay, thank you. Appreciate your work on this bill. We are in work session.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Armstrong had raised an issue with me that I guess I'd like to get clarified from him relating to how we transition from our current, we're transitioning from a current fire protection system with certain rules to a new fire protection system with a different set of rules. And I guess I'd like to have your comments on how we're doing that.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ward Armstrong for OFIC. The question, I think, is really the effective date of the cap. And that's really the question I was raising with you. What happened since that, as originally drafted, as we understood it, it appeared to go into effect 90 days after the end of the session? It's acceptable to us. As I understand, the new change now is to have it be effective December 1990. Am I correct that I'm on the right?
1989.
90. That's apologize. That is a typo.
Oh, sorry.
1990.
December 31st, 1990.
Correct.
And that's acceptable.
And that is the new, what is that, the $10 million? I mean, the whole thing shifts on that date, December 31st, 1990, from the current situation to the new situation of $10 million front-end liability for landowners and the rest for the state.
That's correct.
That correct?
That's our understanding. Now, the one thing
the fees go into effect immediately, I presume.
They go into effect this July 1 of this summer. The one thing we want to be sure is clear is that that leaves the question of excess liability open for this fire season.
Right.
Let's say there are $30 million worth of fires this summer. We hope not. And that's a little different than what we are pledging under this bill, the combined bill, under the new system. As we get out over time, we think we have a system that really treats that liability. We didn't have a chance to get that into place this summer. And I think what we're saying, we're all willing to gamble with that, though. We'll do our best. And the concept of the limit goes into effect next year, second year of the biennium. Do I state that right, Steve? I think I did.
The question was, how soon or how long does the Department of Forestry have, or not the Department of Forestry, the Emergency Fire Cost Committee have to be able to take those excess fire costs and redistributed them back to the landowner, and whether or not we needed something that indicated that there was an effective date on the repeal of 285, which is the repeal of their liability. This subcommittee provided $2 million for the purchase of $13 million worth of insurance and a $4 million deductible, I believe, so that the fire cost, the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund would be obligated for $4 million this year, this fire season. And then we provided the $2 million general fund appropriation to buy $13 million. So you've got $17 million worth of coverage there. If it went beyond the $17 million, then the question came, if this bill went into effect 90 days following, do you still have for this first year the ability to be able to go back and reassess those costs to the landowners? Or are we now under the new system that we all have been thinking was a second year implementation? And that's what the effective date would be then, is the effective date for the repeal of 285.